Had entered into a new system marked by a huge planet surrounded by its ring of asteroids. Ray, I'm sorry to keep on about this, mate, but you promised me a pint somewhere out here. I think we've earned it. Ray looked over.
Yes, and you're completely right. I did promise.
So, where are we then? Asked Jeff, staring out at the mottled planet and its asteroid belt. Well, began Ray, going through the screen-displayed star charts... I'd say... No idea whatsoever. But this might interest you. Look. Out in front of them lay the huge asteroid belt composed of millions of flying rocks of all sizes. One very large one was illuminated by lights and spun like a mirrored disco ball. Jeff looked at the twinkling rock and squinted. What's that? Ray began to pilot the ship towards it. That, my dehydrated friend, is a sight for your sore eyes. Jeff rubbed his sore eyes. Meaning what? Ray smiled in anticipation of Jeff's reaction. Meaning, the first round is on you. Jeff jumped out of his seat like a small boy on Christmas Day. Woohoo! A pub! A pub! The ship approached the meteoroid cautiously and managed to set down in a large crater. Jeff and Ray sat and watched as a large atmosphere dome came up and over the ship. Looking out, Jeff could see a tunnel carved in the walls of the crater, leading off to an illuminated subterranean cavern. Ray locked the hatch of the spacecraft, and both men climbed out. I can smell the barmaid's apron from here. Come on, Ray. Come on, let's go. Shh. Can you hear that? Sounds like laughter. Yeah, everyone in there's having a whale of a time. I want to be in there as soon... No, interrupted Ray. Not there. Nearby. Listen. Jeff did as he was told. There was definitely someone nearby, having a giggle at their expense. No change there, then. Ray put a finger to his lips to silence Jeff, and the two men crept around the landing platform. The sound of laughter got louder. It was definitely female laughter, which to Jeff was definitely nothing new. As they reached the rear of their ship, they discovered the source. Clinging onto the back of the ship were Tailback and Gridlock. Oh, my bod, gasped Ray. Jeff just gasped silently as he saw the two Orbots. Except something was wrong. Gridlock was shivering in fear, while Tailback was hooting with laughter. Come down from there, will you? Called Ray. Both Orbots climbed down and stood in front of them. Tail had calmed her laughter down to a suppressed giggle, and Grid had regained some courage. He still looked shaken up, though. Well, it's nice to see a familiar pair of faceplates, said Ray, scratching his cranium in confusion. How in the seven sons of Salsagora did you two manage to stay on my ship all this time? Grid spoke up first.
We magnetized our casings to the hull. I was against the whole idea, but Tailback wanted to get out and see the galaxy. I'm so sorry, Mr. Ray.
Oh, well, that's all right. Why didn't you just ask for a lift? It would have been much easier.
I know. It was terrifying. I thought we were going to be thrown out into space.
He resumed his uncharacteristic trembling.
Well, what about you? Said Ray to Tailback, who was still sniggering quietly.
When Gridlock stopped smiling and began screaming, it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. It was brilliant.
She hooted a loud laugh once more, which made Jeff chuckle. Here, Ray, I think we've sorted their personality disorders out. His statement was met by Gridlock, bursting out with laughter so loud it made him jump. Tailback responded by screaming and running away from everyone.
Nice try, laughed Ray.
The two Orbots were instructed to stay in the Penguin by Ray, although Jeff had a deviant urge to take Tailback with him. just to see if you could get her intoxicated in some way. But when she explained that alcohol had no adverse effect on her neural pathways, he resigned himself to going it alone. It wouldn't do to be outdrank by a female, let alone a female Orbot. As they left the docking bay, they entered a cavern. It was, for the want of a better word, cavernous. Lit with millions of different neon signs and mirrors, every doorway was a new club, pub or drinking den, each one crammed to the rafters.
What do you think of that, then? Asked Ray to a near speechless Jeff.
My God, it's full of bars. For Jeff, this was another first among his many new experiences. He was standing in a pub. Okay, no big deal. A pub where everyone was drunk? Still no big deal. A pub filled with a myriad of alien occupants, approximately 56,000 light years from the Red Line in his hometown? Possibly the largest of deals. The place was definitely popular. Music played out of an odd-looking moulding on the wall. Patrons would step up to it, place a hand, claw, probe, or tentacle upon its sensor pad, and the music would change, just like a jukebox. And yet, so unlike one at the same time. It wasn't particularly catchy music, just incoherent tones interspersed with the occasional drum sound. Weird. As were the patrons. Jeff tried not to stare, but as he followed Ray to the bar, his eyes skipped from person to person. Some were tall, thin and scaly, more trout than lizard, while others were grey, squat and thick-skinned. The strangest ones defied accurate description. Some even resembled estate agents. The barman was big, big and red. He stood with his back to Ray.
Service, called Ray, tapping the palm of his hand on the wet bar.
Turning around, the barman stepped forward to take the order. Jeff tried to smile a friendly, touristy smile, but when he saw the bovine head of the barman, short horns and huge nostrils, complete with a brass ring through the septum, Jeff smirked rather rudely. He tried his best to remain calm, but this place was a menagerie. Fish people, rhinoceros things, and now a large crimson cow was serving them drinks. Ray got on with the ordering.
Two Scuzzmasters, please.
Luckily, evolution had provided the barman with three digits on each hand instead of the hooves one would expect. He poured the drinks and placed them in front of Ray.
12.50,
grunted the cow. Ray pulled out an octagonal plastic credit card and handed it over.
Kangasanian Express? He asked the barman.
They'll do nicely,
came the reply. Jeff studied their surly bartender. Even though they'd had enough near-death experiences to last them a while, Jeff was possessed by one nagging impulse to open his mouth and say something puerile. It had to be done. He picked up his glass and took a sip, waiting for the barman to leave, and then he winked at Ray.
Should have asked for a Red Bull.
Inside the Marshmallow Penguin, Tailback and Gridlock were doing what they did best. Aside from Grid's occasional laughter and Tail's shrieks of fear, they repaired and improved the inner workings of the spacecraft as best they could. Grid looked at Tailback and smiled.
This is our dream. We're finally away from Orbitron and existing like real fleshies, aren't we?
Yes.
The humans have been very good to us. Jeff Spooner certainly seems to like you.
Does it concern you that he seems affectionate towards me, Grid?
You refer to jealousy. No, I feel nothing of that emotion. We are merely cohabitants, bonded by our defects, but not emotionally entangled like humans.
Tailback nodded.
I suggested that we were siblings.
Gridlock considered this for a moment.
Siblings? Yes. You're my sister, then. We're practically human.
When in roaming mode, do as the carbon units do.
Grid smirked, then he laughed. Then he laughed some more. Tailback joined in, beginning to feel a little more human too. Suddenly, both Orbots stopped laughing. They stopped moving. They stopped thinking. Unknown to any organic life forms on the asteroid, the entire sector of the galaxy was being bombarded by a powerful electroneural inhibitor field. It targeted the data waves of any artificial humanoids in the vicinity, effectively rendering them blank and open to suggestion. New instructions were being piped into them without their permission, and location coordinates were sent back to the source. And over a light year away, the source of the beam prowled through the stars, sniffing out the two rogue machines like a shark that had detected a drop of blood in the water. Only this shark was a big red spaceship called the Furious Anger. In the noisy lounge of the extraterrestrial pub, Jeff and Ray sat at a small corner table. Jeff was liking the place more and more. The beer was all that Ray had promised, tasty beyond belief, cold and smooth to drink, yet it still didn't taste like any earthly beer. "Oh, what do they make this stuff out of?" he asked.
"Well, for the most part," replied Ray, settling back in his chair and holding his litre glass up like a connoisseur. "Water. But that's not all. Various other chemicals and natural items are blended using a unique fermentation process that..." "Whoa, hang on, Professor. Just tell me what it's made of, will you?"
"No," said Ray flatly.
"Why?" asked Jeff, feeling ripped off.
"I'll tell you why, Jeff. Because you've been going on about getting a drink constantly since we left Earth. And now I've managed to provide you with a pub, a chair and a beer. I'm not going to be the one to spoil your enjoyment by revealing the ingredients. So shut up and get another round in." Ray handed him the credit card. Jeff grabbed both glasses and stood up, shaking his head in bewilderment. He walked off to the bar, beginning to sway a little. Ray looked over at the door and watched as a tall, thin man walked in. He was dressed in a colourful cloak which went down to the floor. His face was deathly pale, and his sunken eyes looked sad and watery. This sombre visage was framed by lank, straight hair, black as night and greasy as kebab meat. The combined effect looked like the sullen head had been stitched onto the body of a more vibrant and colourful person in a bizarre experiment. Ray watched as the figure scanned the room, then glided along and sat at a nearby table. At that moment, Jeff returned, bearing two glasses. "Here you go," he said, handing Ray a glass of the lovely liquid. Ray looked over and saw that the pale man was looking in his direction. He raised his fresh liter in salute.
"Cheer up, mate. Might never happen," he said with a smile.
The man's face didn't register the slightest flicker of emotion. Ray noticed.
"Bugger you, then," muttered Ray, chugging back some more beer. He looked at Jeff. "I know what'll liven this lot up a bit," he smiled.
Ray delved into his pocket and pulled out his Top Hits of the 80s compilation CD.
"Party on, matey," yelled Jeff.
Back at the Marshmallow Penguin, Tail and Grid sat perfectly still. Their minds were being interrogated and rogue software was piped in. A great distance away, the scraggy cruiser closed in. Overlord Kelvin strolled into the bridge, wearing his father's scarlet robes of office, complete with an ornate hat upon which lay a banana. Soldiers snapped to attention as he passed.
"Commander!"
One of the ship's officers walked briskly up to face his monarch.
"My lord, we've located the runaway Orbots who assisted Spooner and Scamp."
"Excellent work. How far away are we?"
asked Kelvin, fishing in his pockets.
"Half a light year, sir. We could be there in 5 minutes."
Kelvin kept searching his extravagant robes for any other pockets. At great personal risk, the officer spoke out.
"My lord, there is a problem. The fugitives are in the vicinity of Emo Prime, possibly on the planet as we speak."
Kelvin's expression denoted his total non-comprehension.
"Sir, Emo Prime has the largest space armada after our own. It wouldn't do to upset them as they might possibly destroy us in a conflict."
Kelvin, being less of a strategist and more of a cowardist, understood.
"Oh, well, that is a problem. What do you suggest, then?"
"We're currently establishing a remote link with refugee Orbots.
We could use them to try and retrieve the fugitives from the Emos rather than cause an intergalactic incident.
Kelvin patted his chest and thighs, still looking for something. Yes, good idea. Before you go, one question.
Yes, my lord?
Have you seen my banana?
It's on your head, my lord.
Kelvin felt his hat and retrieved the banana. Excellent work, Commander. Now, to work! The unmistakable sound of mid-1980s pop music ran out through the bar, courtesy of Ray's compilation CD, which had somehow been forced into the jukebox, and somehow it played perfectly. Most of the patrons were standing now, gathered around the corner table where Ray and Jeff had been sitting. Now, they were standing on the dangerously wobbling table, both men completely smashed and singing badly. The crowd cheered and waved their arms in encouragement. Jeff slipped on a damp beer mat and fell off the table into the assembled throng. Luckily, they caught him, and he found himself crowd surfing, held aloft by the crowd's hands, claws, tentacles, and fins. Ray saw Jeff whooping in delight as he bobbed along on the crowd and thought, rather dizzily, that he'd follow suit. He leapt off the table, spinning around in midair so as to land on the crowd back first. The crowd had other ideas and parted like the Red Sea, allowing Ray to crash unceremoniously onto the floor. Some of the patrons helped him to his feet, and he looked around the room, noticing that Jeff had surfed all the way to the bar and was now standing upon it, attempting to upstage Elvis with his own rendition of Jailhouse Rock. He also noticed that the sullen man in the multicoloured cloak had been joined by some more of his species, about 20 in total. They all stood watching in silence, with a look of disgust on their faces. Ray thought it best that he addressed the situation.
"Come on, fellas! Let your hair down!"
bawled Ray, wobbling uncontrollably. He noticed that their hair was already let down.
"Oh, brilliant! Come on, then! Who wants a drink? I'm buying scuzzies all round, is it?"
The group dispersed. Two went to the door, closing and locking it. Then all the coloured cloaks came off, revealing black, functional outfits. Each man drew a gun from a side holster. One of them held out his gun and blasted the wall-mounted speaker, killing the music instantly. The crowd settled down just as quickly. The first of the pale men addressed the crowd.
"This is a police raid. All of you are under arrest under the Anti-Joviality Act of Emo Prime Law. Anything you do or say to have further fun will be used in evidence against you."
Jeff looked at the police officers from his vantage point at the bar.
"Hi, Dracula, what are you doing?"
He called out to the arresting officer and was promptly shot with a stun beam. He toppled off the bar and right to a table underneath him. Ray saw this and grabbed the arm of the officer who'd blasted Jeff.
"You can't do that," he protested.
They could, and they did. When the lights came on again, Jeff was pleased to see himself standing beside Ray. But he was far from pleased to see that he and Ray had somehow been transported into a large room full of sour-faced people. Both men had experienced no sensation of having travelled anywhere, yet they looked around the place, a large courthouse of some sort. They noticed that they were both standing in the dock.
"Ray,"
said Jeff, happy to be reunited with the barber.
"You all right?"
Ray nodded.
"Yeah, I'm fine. I think we're in trouble again, though."
"No kidding,"
said Jeff, and he wasn't. The room was populated by about 50 white-faced emos. These were the pale, solemn types that had so cruelly pooped the party. At the front of the room, facing them, was a raised dais with a lectern placed upon it. The entire courtroom was drably decorated in uninspiring shades of grey, as were the occupants. The thin, sad-looking group of witnesses huddled together in their collective depression and looked over at the accused with sorrowful eyes, half hidden by black fringes.
All rise,
called a voice. Everyone in the room instantly stood up, including Jeff and Ray. They reasoned that they were in enough deep guano already that being insolent would only add to their punishment. The huge door slid slowly open to reveal a very tall man in flowing black robes. His craggy, colourless face showed very little emotion, just a sort of deep sadness. For a race called emos, they seemed awfully emotionless, thought Jeff. The high priest glided in and took his seat at the end of the room. Before sitting down, he addressed the assembled group in front of him.
Mood apathetic,
he said dolefully.
Mood apathetic,
replied the emos in unison. Then he sat down, prompting everyone else to do the same.
Members of the jury,
began the high priest,
this is a case of the highest importance. Look ye upon the faces of the accused, and know that they are sent across the universe on a mission to destroy all that we stand for.
Jeff's eyes turned to look at Ray, while his head remained still. He whispered out of the side of his mouth. Oh, that's a bit much. The priest continued with his opening speech.
Know ye all this? A crime of levity, such as these two detestable parasites have committed, is reprehensible enough. But there is more, much more to this than ye may be aware.
He pointed an accusing finger out at the two frightened men. Jeff flinched.
The planets are in alignment, as the great prophecy says, and here before ye stand, the evil one and his accomplice, also as it was foreseen. See how the colour of their hair deviates from the divine blackness that we share. Their strange garments in aberrant tones that seek to poison our vision. Are these colours not the work of the evil one?
At this point, Jeff couldn't help but smirk at the ridiculousness of it all. These sad, pale idiots were trying to condemn them for daring to seek happiness? The prosecutor saw Jeff's smirk and pounced.
Aha! Look how he mocks us even now, practicing the forbidden expression here in our room of somber justice. He tries to spread the poison.
Oh, for God's sake, give it a rest, will you? Blurted Jeff. He'd had enough of the pantomime.
Oh, you lot could do with a little happiness in your lives. Oh, look at this place. Look at yourselves. I've had more fun in an abattoir.
The high priest raised an eyebrow.
The accused will be silent.
No, he won't. Make me.
The priest pushed a grey button on his black desk, and the dock in which Jeff was standing was infused with high-voltage electricity. The current raced through Jeff as if it were dental floss made of barbed wire. The pain was excruciating. He had no choice but to endure it, shaking violently, as Ray could do nothing but look on in horror. After what seemed like an age, but was in actuality a few seconds, the current was shut off. Jeff fell back into his chair, twitching and wondering how close he'd gotten to his death.
Not one of my best ideas, eh?
Ray looked tenderly at his frazzled friend, tears welling up in his eyes.
You bloody idiot. Shut up and let me do the talking.
Oh, cheers, said Jeff. The prosecutor looked uncomfortably eager to proceed.
Perhaps now we may continue uninterrupted.
The defense counsel approached the bench. Looking up at the high priest, he began his opening statement.
I hereby declare that I am to defend the accused in accordance with the law to the best of my ability.
The high priest nodded slowly.
Very well. Proceed.
The scarecrow turned and approached the dock. where Ray and Jeff eyed their only saviour with quickly dissolving confidence.
Members of the jury and my learned friend, I stand here today to provide a defence for the accused. Look at their misguided attempts to live a righteous life. Their unfrowning features, their unknowing eyes. I put it to you that they are not truly evil, but merely ignorant of the truth. Dumb animals. I say to you that they be taken from this court and indoctrinated in the ways of the holy ABC, so that apathy, boredom, and complacency forms a new and righteous core to their meaningless existences.
Jeff had finally managed to stand up. He whispered to Ray out of the side of his mouth again. Blimey, is that the best he's got to say? Ray offered a calming thought.
Listen, if it gets us off the death penalty, isn't that an improvement?
I guess. Let's see what this bloke can do then, eh? Ray tried to look optimistic, but he'd lost all confidence by now. The High Priest looked over and addressed his captives.
What say you, the accused? Are you willing to accept salvation and deny your sinful ways, to surrender your very lives to the holy ABC in its ultimate wisdom?
Ray blinked, thinking deeply. He was trying to put some mental jigsaw pieces together. Something was missing here, but he couldn't think what it was. Jeff's somewhat shallower thoughts got to the point quicker than Ray's did. Evidence? Where's the evidence? If we've committed these so-called crimes, any trial should have evidence against us. Ray looked at Jeff in admiration and confusion simultaneously. The defending attorney looked at Ray for some sign of agreement or denial.
What he said,
mumbled the befuddled barber. Turning his creaky neck to the right, the High Priest inquired,
Is there any evidence to support the charges?
There is, Your Honour. I submit to the court Exhibit A, an audio device that the accused willingly brought with them. This proves their intentions to corrupt the minds of our citizens and thus prove their guilt beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Play Exhibit A, said the High Priest.
The pale occupants of the room mumbled nervously until they heard a faint crackle coming out over the PA system. Then silence reigned for 5 long seconds. The unnerving sounds of a synthesized drum fill tumbled out of the speakers, signifying the opening beats of a classic 80s pop hit. Ray began to jig about in the dock, unable to ignore the infectious rhythm. Jeff noticed this, and while he tried to throw an advisory glare at the dancing fool, he couldn't help noticing that he, too, was nodding in time to the beat. The prosecutor noticed this and pointed his finger at the humans in the most dramatic and prosecute-y way. See, he bawled, see how the accursed music of levity possesses their souls. Are these not the actions of the guilty? Jeff looked down. Guilty feet have indeed got no rhythm. The defense counsel rolled his eyes and dropped into a chair, utterly defeated. Ray looked across the faces of the audience in shock. He'd expected stony sneers of hatred, intermingled with twitchy grimaces of discomfort, but there were none. Everyone seemed to have had their facial expressions wiped of all discernible emotion. He looked over at Jeff.
Jeff, look, something's happening, he hissed, trying to be subtle.
Indeed, something was happening. And it was happening on a widespread basis. The Great Prophecy was, for all intents and purposes, law on Emo Prime. And as the capture and trial of the two humans was perhaps the most important event to have happened to their civilization since the prophecy was written, the High Councillors had decided to broadcast the trial live to every home on the planet, encouraging the public to tune in to see the wrongdoers get to their just deserts. Unfortunately, their plan had backfired. Every single inhabitant of the joyless sphere was listening intently as the irresistible musical masterpiece bounced around their auditory canals and, in a unique way, infused their very thought patterns with the previously unknown feeling that was optimism. Optimism became happiness, happiness became joy, and joy became bliss, as billions of people turned to one another and bared their teeth in a new expression, the smile. Only the high priest looked unaffected, but even he showed the signs of panic as he swung his head from left to right, trying to comprehend the impossible. Emos were rising from their chairs and swaying in time, twirling and waving their arms in unabashed ecstasy, and then something even more incredible happened. White, pallid skin warmed, filling with revitalized, enthusiastic blood flow. Lank hair that had once hung like glossy black spaghetti lightened and formed into waves as the chemical change forced their follicles to move. A monochrome, monotone planet was bursting into bloom like a garden of poppies. Jeff saw his chance and grabbed Ray by the arm. "Come on, now! Now's our chance to get out of here," he said, clambering out of the dock. Ray followed him as they weaved through the beaming throng of revelers. A few yards behind them, the High Priest called out, "Stop the infidels! Somebody help me!" But his time had come. Ray pushed past some more shiny, happy people as he made his way to the courtroom doors. Jeff stopped him. "Hey, why don't we hang out for a bit now? Well, we aren't in any danger anymore, are we?" Ray looked deadly serious as he produced the track list of the CD, which was currently revolutionizing the planet's population. "Read it." Jeff did so, scanning the list of mid to late 1980s hits. Rick Astley, Tom Jones, Kim Wilde. What's your point?" "Track 8, said Ray, urging Jeff to concentrate. Jeff read it and looked up at Ray, finally realizing the gravity of the situation. "Oh, my God. The Smiths," he gasped. "Exactly. Heaven knows I'm miserable now. Number 10 in 1984. The most depressing song in the entire universe. If they hear that, it'll totally reverse the current effect and we're back in deep doggy doings. Let's get out of here while they're still smiling." Jeff was through the door long before Ray.